Hey there, it's Lars. Thanks for checking out the Lars Larson podcasting experience, and have a fantastic day. It's
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Thank God it's Friday!
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
We will make America great again.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS to speak your mind. Now, First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday night. Your phone calls and emails are always welcome. Remember, if you're a naysayer, in other words, somebody who thinks I'm full of beans on a given subject, feel free to call the show. You'll go to the head of the line at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. Can you believe one prominent Democrat says that President Trump was dishonoring God when he withdrew from the Paris Accord? It's just another insane claim from the liberal side of the aisle back in D.C. How much worse can it get for Kathy Griffin? She is now claiming to be a victim of bullying. Bullying? This from a woman who was holding the bloody severed head of the president earlier this week? It's a little bit hard to take. And boy, the boo-hooing and all, that her career is ruined. Yeah, a woman with a net worth of about $20 million, she doesn't even need to be working at this point, and she ruined her own career. What is she complaining about? Soon, it may be illegal to put people behind bars for mental illness or even suicidal tendencies. I'll talk with one forensic psychologist who's going to give us all the details on that. And helping our veterans should be a top priority in America, so why does the VA keep bad employees on the payroll? Oh, and one company is selling an empty package, and people are buying it anyway. We'll tell you about that, too. Don't forget to cast a vote in my quick poll. You can find it online at LarsLarson.com. Tonight, should the United States Supreme Court allow President Trump's travel ban to go forward? I'd vote yes on that. I've been telling you all the way to the beginning of this controversy, the president's order was well-founded in the Constitution, and it was well-founded in the law. And the lower courts have based their decisions on things the president said back on the campaign trail, not on the actual facts of the order that he issued. Anyway, you'll find the quick poll at LarsLarson.com. It's brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. If you want to join, as I did quite some time ago, just go to amac.us. That's amac.us, not .com. You can also call and join 888-262-2006. AMAC's better for you and better for America. And while you're on the website, visit my new trophy room at LarsLarson.com. Post a picture and a paragraph about your latest hunting or fishing adventure for a chance to win some fantastic prizes, including from great companies like Leupold and Stevens. Anyway, happy First Amendment Friday. The best conversation in talk journalism is what we live up to. That's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Follow my show on Twitter at Lars Larson Show and on Facebook at The Lars Larson Show. And if you're inclined to send emails, they all come right to me, talk@LarsLarson.com. Now about the subject of the day. Yep, President Trump decided to pull out the Paris Climate Agreement. I thought it was an absolutely brilliant move. Makes a lot of sense. I haven't yet had a naysayer, not yesterday and certainly not today, who could tell me why America should stay in a deal, a non-binding deal. That's problem number one. Problem number two, it's a treaty. I don't care what President Obama called it. The founding fathers of this country knew that presidents would occasionally have to cut deals with other countries. And they said, you can do that, but we have to call it a treaty, and you have to submit the treaty to the United States Senate. And they have to approve it by a two-thirds vote. None of that happened with the Paris Climate Accord. It's simply a non-binding treaty never approved by the United States Senate. Well, Nancy Pelosi says the president's speech contained false justifications for pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement. She also blasted her GOP colleagues in Congress for refusing to see the problem as she sees it. She actually said President Trump was dishonoring God for pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement. And I'll tell you something. She also suggested that she worries that Barron Trump, the president's son, may not be able to draw a breath in a few years because we pulled out of a non-binding treaty that requires that the United States cut back its CO2 and lets most of the rest of the developing countries around the world just go ahead and do whatever they want. Bob's on the line from Texas. Bob, thanks for listening on KTSA. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I just want to say I disagree that Kathy Griffin's career's on the blitz. I mean, she could be a writer for Jeff Dunham. I mean, she's given him a lifetime of material.
Yes, she has. She certainly has. If she wanted to engage in that kind of stuff, she should have taken a lesson from some of these people. It just floors me that this woman and the people around her didn't say, this is an incredibly bad idea, long before they ever shot the picture or put it up on the internet. These folks were not very bright when they did this.
No, and on the Democrats talking about disobeying God, they don't even believe in it. Why would how?
That's a
good... I mean, you know, how can you disobey something that you don't believe in?
I'd have to agree with you. There are a great many godless heathens in the Democrat Party, and that is a sad statement on America, isn't it? Bob, thanks for the call, and thanks for listening in San Antonio. Well, for Kathy Griffin, the ball just keeps rolling downhill. It wasn't bad enough that she pulled off this stupid stunt involving the severed head of the president. And the crazy picture she took with all that red coloring on it that made it look as though the president's head was covered in blood and that he had been decapitated. In other words, Kathy Griffin deciding both to threaten the president, to do something incredibly disgusting, and to use a technique to suggest that the president might be killed by a technique used these days primarily by the Islamic State. But today she came out and she did a little boo-hoo act about how sad she is and how sorry she is. And then she decided to lay into the president that is Donald Trump's fault for bullying her.
I don't think I will have a career after this. I think he, I'm going to be honest, he broke me. And then I was like, no, this isn't right. It's just not right.
Yeah, Kathy Griffin, professional victim. I don't think the Victim Act is going to go over very well. I don't think it's going to get her any more bookings. And if she's worried about being without a career, well, you're the one who decided to blow your own career up. That wasn't Donald Trump's doing, and it wasn't the doing of anyone else in America. You managed to become, at least for a nanosecond, one of the most disliked women anywhere in America. You've heard me talk about my Sleep Number bed and what a great night's sleep I get almost every night. My Sleep Number setting is 65, and my Sleep IQ score last night was a 90. Maybe you've considered a Sleep Number bed, but you weren't sure you could afford one. Well, consider this. The Sleep Number bed adjusts on each side. I've been sleeping in one, along with my wife, for 17 and a half years. So it's just right for both of you. It lasts twice as long as an innerspring mattress. And bottom line, can you really afford another restless night's sleep? The Sleep Number bed adjusts on each side to your ideal firmness, comfort, and support. Your Sleep Number setting, 65 like mine, might be a very firm mattress. It is the perfect bed for couples. And with optional Sleep IQ technology, it tracks your sleep and gives you some hints about how to get a better night's sleep. Now's the best time to come to a Sleep Number store during their semi-annual sale, where a queen C2 mattress is just $699.99. You'll only find Sleep Number at any of the 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find the one nearest you by going to sleepnumber.com, and be sure to tell them Lars sent you. There's a reason I've been sleeping in that bed for 17 and a half years. It's because I get a great night's sleep. When we come back, it could soon be law in the state of Colorado that people who are suicidal or have a mental hold in jail, well, they might not have so many options anymore. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is my genuine pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday night, and always glad to welcome Dr. John Huber, who is a clinical forensic psychologist. Doctor, thanks for taking the time on a Friday evening.
Well, it's my pleasure, Lars. Thanks for having me on.
Now, can you explain this to me? Because from a distance, it sounds crazy that it'll be against the law in Colorado to lock people in jail if they are picked up on a mental health hold, because what's going to happen to them instead?
Well, the difference is, instead of taking them to jail, they need to take them to some facility that has mental health care providers there.
But are there such facilities, and are they going to be confinement facilities for somebody who's really out of control?
And that's the beauty of this whole thing. They have an excess of $9.5 million of tax funds from marijuana sales that they're using to fund this, so that they're putting mechanisms in place. And in areas where they don't have physical facilities, they've already got a plan to put mobile units that can travel around in those districts, in the rural districts, and take care of this.
So what will be the practical difference, instead of being locked in a cell but without access to the kind of medical professionals you might want to have with somebody who's having mental problems, they'll be locked up in a different kind of facility with access to those things?
Well, the kind of difference is, if you get locked up and they take you to jail for a mental health issue, you're not getting thrown in a cell with 14 other people who happen to be all alcoholics and drunk and throwing up all over the place. You actually get to be held in a place where there's people who will hold and take care of you respectfully with regard to your mental illness.
Doctor, $9.5 million sounds like a lot of money, but I've covered government long enough to know that $9.5 million is usually a rounding error for government agencies.
It is, exactly. That's one of my concerns. With one of the things I'm trying to deal with here in Texas with my nonprofit but they've got plans, because there are lots of areas that actually have mental health facilities, and the police then will restrain the individual, put them in their vehicles, and then take them to those areas. So this $9.5 million, at least in theory, sounds like it's going just to the rural areas to focus on places that don't have that mental health care component.
You know, Doc, one of my earliest experiences as a reporter was I like to go on ride-alongs with the cops, because I'd get some real good practical info about how they handled things. And I remember one night they called with an unwanted, that's what dispatch used to call them, unwanted at such and such. And we went to this decent-looking apartment building, and there was a guy in there who was acting crazy. He'd broken a couple of windows to get into the hallway, and then he was banging on people's doors. And obviously, this is scaring the daylights out of people in the apartment complex. And the officer took him into custody, put him in the back of the car, and then we drove off to a facility that doesn't even exist anymore. And it wasn't, you know, like some giant castle-looking thing with iron bars on it. It wasn't like the old-fashioned jails. It was a decent-looking, it kind of looked like a hospital or a clinic. But in a lot of communities, they've done away with those things, and I wonder, what the heck are they supposed to do with people who are out of control and are, you know, one step away from either hurting somebody or hurting themselves? Do we need to recreate those facilities?
I think there's a lot of things that need to happen that we took away for whatever reason, starting back in the 1970s when, you know, they went back to the community mental health model and they emptied our mental health facilities. I mean, the one here in Austin State Hospital, went from 3,500 people down to 300 overnight, and those people are out on the street, and they still are. That's problematic in itself. And yes, we're going to have to recreate some of these things. I think at this point, though, they're going to be a lot more, for lack of a better term, humane, because our technologies and our treatments have changed dramatically since the 70s.
And how much of that treatment can you force on someone with the civil commitment laws the way they are?
What it is, you know, you have an observation period. And that observation period is where the mental health providers collect their data. And if the person is deemed to be a threat to themselves or others, then we go before a judge. And then the judge determines what needs to happen. In some cases, they say, yes, you know, you have to keep them detained and give them therapy. In some cases, they say, not only do you give them therapy, but you have to give them medication. And if the patient still wants to refuse the medication, even with a court order, you know, we have medications that are injectable now that, that are relatively new in the last 10 or 15 years and that we never had before. But still, there's not enough of a different variance of types of injectable mental health medications, psychotropics, that are available. It's a tough situation. I'm just happy that they took this big step. The whole idea that if you have a mental health problem, they're going to arrest you when you haven't committed a crime.
Yep.
That is a serious issue with civil rights. For me and my nonprofit, we're trying to destigmatize mental health issues. That does not help at all if they can be arrested because they have a mental health issue.
That's a good point. So, Doc, you want to tell people where to find your website so they can learn more about your efforts in Texas?
Excellent. It's mainstreammentalhealth.org. And we're starting in Texas, but we're shooting for nationwide. So hopefully we'll be rolling this stuff out.
Sounds like a great effort. Dr. John Huber with us. Thanks a lot, Doc. I appreciate the time. Let's go to Steve on a First Amendment Friday night. Steve, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Lars. I was wanting to jump back to the Paris Peace Accord and relate something that I found out when we visited Butte, Montana last summer.
Yeah.
Butte, Montana is one of the biggest copper mines currently in the United States and still operating. They shut down the smelter for that mine a decade ago or thereabouts, and there are no raw material copper smelters left in the United States. They ship their concentrate to China. A few years ago, the EPA shut down the last fully functional lead smelter in the United States. The concentrates are being shipped to China. All of the nickel that's used to power our Tesla cars and all our happy battery cars comes from one of the biggest Superfund nickel mine sites in somewhere South Africa, somewhere. But the point is, we have the United States making sacrifices that literally could, you know, put us back to the Stone Age as far as our ability to fend for ourselves, so that we can ship all of our raw materials to China or India or somewhere else, so that we can feel good about our environment while we're polluting the snot out of theirs and giving them a buy for 30, 40, 50 years, whatever, to do anything about it.
Yeah, and that's the crazy hypocrisy of this, for people to say, well, we won't let America burn coal, but we're okay if China burns coal. And what's China doing? Producing goods for America. All you've done is export your pollution problem. It's like dealing with your trash by putting in a big plastic bag, drive a mile down the road, and throw it in somebody else's yard. Nobody would suggest that you were being environmentally sound by doing something like that. But if we ship all that power generation away from here where we know how to do it right, I mean, if we can build clean coal right now, it's not a technology of the future. It's a technology we have right now. In fact, a lot of the coal plants in America have had to upgrade, if they're older, to modern standards. And if we built a brand new one, I wish we could get a big power company to have the guts to go out and say, we're going to build the model clean coal plant from the technology we have right now and show America how it's done. It's except that I think that people are so afraid of it. These utility companies are afraid that if they try to do something like that long before it ever opened up or started generating power, you'd have all the lefties out there picketing them and talking about what lousy people they are. Wouldn't it be better if we burn that coal here instead of telling the Chinese to burn it so they can make our iPhones and our laptop computers? Steve, thanks for the call. Back in just a moment.
The Lars Larson Show. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the program. I'll get back to your phone call shortly, but Americans ought to be ashamed of the fact that in this great country, we have known now for years about the huge problems at the Veterans Administration, and yet somehow we're told that our government is powerless to even get rid of the identified bad employees at the VA and do right by those men and women who've served us in uniform. John Burns joins me now, who's the North Carolina Field Director for Concerned Veterans of America and a former Marine and a member of the North Carolina National Guard. John, good to have you back on the program, and thanks again for your service.
Lars, well, thank you for having me on. Thanks to all your listeners for caring about an issue that's really so important to America's veterans.
Well, let's talk about some of the most recent examples. Tell me about Brian Hawkins.
This is just a travesty. So this guy has been presiding over a facility in Washington, D.C. that's just rife with mismanagement. And the VA, you know, rather than doing what you or I would do if this person worked for us, right, in our private sector business, firing them, the VA just shuffles the chairs on the deck of the Titanic, takes away, you know, the job he had, which was running something, gives him a job with a better title somewhere down the hall doing something close to nothing, pays him a little more, and says, hey, it's all good. A couple of weeks after that happens, they find a dead guy in his parking lot that turns out to be a veteran who's been missing for 2 days and nobody could find him because he was in their parking lot and this facility couldn't even do a clean sweep of former patients to find out if maybe somebody who was missing, who wasn't getting the treatment that he needed at their facility, ends up dead in their parking lot.
And by the way, just so people understand, this veteran was not a homeless veteran, and there are too many of those, but this is a man who had an appointment at that VA facility and apparently left, died in the parking lot, and went undiscovered for a period of time. It just sounds like something out of a third world country.
You know, it's just another indication of why we need the VA Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act of 2017, why we need Congress to kind of double down on what the President and Secretary Shulkin have been doing in the last few months, which is trying to turn this, you know, this horrific, you know, shipwreck of a ocean-going vessel that's headed in the wrong direction for decades and decades, turn it around and bring some accountability into a broken system.
Hey, John, what would be the mechanism that you'd suggest as the field director for Concerned Veterans of America to get Congress off the dime and get them, force them to take some action?
Well, the thing is that folks who care about this issue, the grassroots, have to continue to put pressure on their senators, particularly the senators right now, to pass this bill. So this bill is kind of an evolution of an earlier bill that was in the Senate, the VA Accountability First Act of 2017. It matches up pretty closely with that. There's a little bit of different language. But if this passes the Senate, Phil Rowe and Speaker Ryan have said that they can basically marry it to the bill that's in the House, and it's going to pass without a lot of fanfare. And what that would do is reinforce what President Trump has done and Secretary Shulkin have done in creating this Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection, and send a message to the union employees at the VA that these kind of shenanigans are not going to be tolerated anymore. Send a message to the senior executives at the VA that they're backslapping, you know, corrupt, you know, shuffling themselves around because their buddies are in management so they can keep their bonuses. All of that's a message of the past. But, you know, if people care about this, reach out to your senator, call your senator, tell them, you know, get the VA Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act of 2017 onto the floor of the Senate, pass it. The House will marry it up to their bill, and we'll get it on the president's desk. And obviously this president, you know, he's shown that he cares about our veterans. He's going to sign this bill, and we'll have some accountability.
You know, John, all of us work on deadlines. I know you have deadlines. I have deadlines every day. If I'm not in front of the microphone at the given hour and minute and second, I'm in trouble because I have to explain to my boss why I didn't meet a deadline. And I have deadlines all day long. And I guess when I hear about this problem just over and over again, and, oh, the Congress knows about it and they've got a bill, and any day now we'll get it out of committee or we'll get it to the floor or we'll get it to the other chamber, I almost wish we could set deadlines. You know, get rid of the filibuster rule. I'd get rid of that in a heartbeat. I would love to see somebody say once a bill is introduced, there is a tracked timeline. And it must be it's up or out, kind of like the military. You either you're gonna get some action on it, and it either goes up or out. And if everybody knew that, first of all, we probably wouldn't have nearly as many bills introduced. But the ones that did get introduced, we'd say, well, once we start the clock on this thing, it either flies or it dies. And if you did that, you might actually get the Congress to do something. But right now, there is no penalty, it seems, other than maybe public being unhappy about something. If somebody just sits on a bill almost forever, it just goes on and on and on, and there's no deadline for it.
So that's so true, and that's been our experience. You know, we've been working on this issue, you know, really since before the scandals of 2014 broke. In 2012 and 2013, we were working on it from the benefits backlog side, which was all we could see, and the homelessness problem. But when the scandals hit Phoenix in 2014, you know, we pushed really hard for accountability and transparency. We got some with the BA Accountability Act of 2014, which allowed the secretary, then Shinseki, to fire senior executive service members, which neither he nor Secretary McDonald deemed necessary in spite of all the problems with the system. They didn't want to remove anybody of authority from a position where they were doing things wrong. I don't understand that. But we've been fighting to get this level bill passed where it brings that kind of accountability down to the rank and file since 2015. And there have been all kinds of missteps. You know, we couldn't get out of committee in 2015, you know, largely because of a senator from Connecticut who had lied about his veterans experience. Fortunately for most of America, that senator is no longer, you know, the ranking member in the Veterans Affairs Committee in the Senate. It's now Senator John Tester, who actually signed on to this bill as a co-sponsor. So this bill now has bipartisan support from both sides of the aisle, including Senator Bill Nelson, Senator Tester, Senator Tammy Baldwin, Senator Marco Rubio, Isaacson on the Republican side. So like, we're excited because this is the best chance we've seen to have this kind of a accountability bill get out of committee and onto the Senate floor in a long, long time. So, yeah, the Senate has really dragged its heels a lot on VA accountability over the last 4 years. Hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, this is the year. We've got a president who's going to sign the bill. We've got bipartisan support on it. We really look like we can pass this and send a message to the rank and file employees, particularly those union employees who think that they're, you know, untouchable in the system, that those days are over.
Absolutely right. Keep up the good work for Concerned Veterans for America, John. And maybe one of these days we'll get a Congress that actually works on a time clock instead of working on whenever we're done, we're done. And well, thanks, you know, thanks so much.
Their time clock is, you know, when's the next recess? When's the next break?
Exactly. And when's the next election? We've always got a reason why we can't get anything done. And as you said, if we had employees like that, we'd probably fire them in a heartbeat. John Burns is the North Carolina field director for Concerned Veterans for America. By the way, tonight, if you're a small business owner, you may be wondering, where do I get the things I need to have to make my small business really great? Well, I have the same kind of problems, folks, because I run a small business. Vistaprint knows all about that, and Vistaprint.com is where you can find the solutions. Business cards, postcards, flyers, banners, they've got it all, apparel and invitations. And if you go to Vistaprint.com, you can design the things you want. You can do your own designs. They'll help you with designs. And by the way, satisfaction is guaranteed. They will make it right. And we've had the occasion to make use of that, to call Vistaprint and say, something didn't quite come out right, and they said it right. Well, visit Vistaprint.com right now. 500 business cards. How's this for a deal? Starting at $9.99. Just use my name when you check out. That's Lars, not Larson, Lars. And you save up to 50% over the regular site pricing. The quality is great. They are easy to customize. I can say that because I designed my own business cards, and they came out just great. You can't beat the price to try 500 business cards for just $9.99. It's a chance to get that professional look on any budget. So don't wait. Go to Vistaprint.com and order today. That's Vistaprint.com. While the liberals are screaming that Trump failed the world by backing out of Paris, the real failure is our leaders who don't actually live up to their climate promises. We'll talk about that next, right here on First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
The conversation continues at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I'll get back to your phone calls and your emails on this First Amendment Friday in just a moment at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Well, with all this blathering about the Paris Agreement and I think the sensible decision by President Trump to say, let's get out of a deal that is not binding on the signatories, that puts America at an extraordinary disadvantage and allow China and India and other major countries to continue polluting and increase their pollution for another dozen years or so, while America is told to cut back to levels below 2005. Well, I thought we'd get some real science in here. Tom Harris is the executive director of the International Climate Science Coalition. Tom, it's good to have you back on the program.
Yeah, good to be on, Lars.
So what is the mainstream media missing when they're telling this story about the Paris Agreement and about what this really, really represents to this country?
Well, they're missing two major things. First of all, it's kind of like buying a car, and you say, I'll contribute $5, and you pay the rest, and we'll have joint ownership. And that's, of course, what the Paris Agreement is. Even if you did accept that we were the master controllers of climate, the target agreed to by the Obama administration is 26 to 28% below 2005 levels, while China agreed to stop increasing its CO2 emissions by 2030. And that translates into a 70% rise above 2005 levels by 2025. Okay, so as President Trump would say, unbelievable. I mean, so that's the first thing. The second thing, of course, is that it makes no sense. I mean, the objective is as follows. It says right here in Article 2 of the Paris Agreement, they want to hold the increase in global average temperature to well below 2 degrees above pre-industrial levels. Okay, they're acting as if we have a thermostat that we can control the planet's climate. You know, so I mean, that is fundamentally silly.
No, because when they have tried to forecast it, they forecast from the 70s we're going to an ice age, and that didn't happen. They forecast in the 80s that their computer models said we were going to hit an inexorable warming, and then when the numbers didn't bear that out, 25 years in the future, virtually everybody pointed to the models and said, look, the models didn't do what you said they were going to do. They then said, well, we'll just call it climate change. Whether it goes up or down, we have to start making changes. And that one doesn't make sense. I want to ask you about one of the favorite hobby horses of people who call in on this. They say why America is the biggest producer of greenhouse gases in the world. And tell me if I'm wrong in thinking we generate in gross numbers the greatest amount of CO2, in part because planet Earth's GDP is about $80 trillion, and the U.S. is about $20 trillion of that, about a quarter. So this, you know, fairly large country with a fairly small population compared to the rest of the world, 330 million people produce a quarter of all the goods and services on the planet. Of course, we put out more CO2. If you equated the amount of CO2 that's put out per GDP dollar, I'd venture to say that America is far more efficient, less carbon produced than the rest of the world.
No, you're right. The U.S. is actually very efficient in comparison with much of the world. But, you know, China actually passed the United States a few years ago and is quickly approaching double the CO2 emission limits of the United States. Okay, so China is actually considerably ahead of the U.S. when it comes to overall CO2 emissions. And you know, that's why if you're really serious about reducing CO2, you can't let the biggest emitter completely off the hook, which is essentially what they've done.
Well, let me throw into that, Tom, the other number I know, U.S. GDP is not quite $20 trillion. Chinese GDP, I looked up the latest number this morning, is $10 trillion. So we produce twice as much stuff, but they produce twice as much greenhouse gas. So, you know, if you want someone to be better at not putting out CO2, the United States is already a good player and China is the bad player, even if you just compare them not necessarily on the gross amount they put out, but the amount they put out for what they produce.
Increasing energy efficiency is something that the developing world should really strive for, and that is what India's main target is. And that makes a great deal of sense, because then you're producing less real pollution and you're producing more real goods. And the other point that they often bring up in this whole climate thing is that we're going to have massive extreme weather all across the planet, you know, increasing out of sight. And yet people aren't checking the basic data. You know, the United States, through the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, they keep the best records on the planet. Okay, people can go to their website and they can check out the records for Oregon, you know, maximum temperature, minimum temperature, most rainfall, most snow, all those sorts of things. And what they'll see, for example, with Oregon is the maximum temperature of 119 degrees was set in 1898. Okay. And what you find is that very few extreme weather records are being set recently. In fact, in the whole of 2016, and you think this is a lot of records because there's at least 5 records per state for all 50 states, there was not a single record set in 2016 or 2015. Okay. You have to go back to the 1930s to find when there were multiple records being set every year. So one of the sad things is that most people are believing this real dogma about there being an increase in extreme weather, and yet they're not checking the records. And it's easy to do. A 10-year-old can do it.
You just go to the NOAA website and take a look at the climate data. And you said 1899 or 1898 was the high record high temperature.
Yeah, that's right, 119 degrees. It was set on 2 days in 1898, July 29th and August 10th, 1898, in places called Prineville, Pendleton. And Pendleton. Those are two places, 1898. That's when your maximum temperature in Oregon was set.
Maybe somebody should send a note to Al Gore and let him know about this, because he doesn't appear to know this stuff.
Yeah, and yet they wanted to turn off your least expensive source of power, which powers, you know, roughly a third of the country. I mean, coal, it doesn't provide that much in Oregon. You know, you're getting something like 6% of your electricity from coal, but there are many parts of the United States that get 90% of their electricity from coal. It's the cheapest form of power, except when you're in places where you have lots of hydropower, like in Oregon.
Well,
so, you know,
the other thing is this deal, whether we stay in it or not, and whether China's a signatory or not, it allows China and India and other countries to continue to build coal plants today, right?
Well, that's right, because they have an out clause, okay? In the basic agreement, which is the UN Climate Treaty from 1992, and all the other ones, Paris, Kyoto, they're all based on it, it says that developing countries' first and foremost priority is development and pulling their people out of poverty, not climate change. Okay, so the last thing they're going to do is turn off their coal stations, which are the cheapest form of power. And they are allowed to do that. They have that out clause that does not exist for our countries, the developed world.
We're good to get out of it. The thing that's frustrated me in the last couple of days, Tom, is this. The mainstream media, there's a boatload of stories they're doing about all the bad things about coming out of Paris, although they're not very specific about what's bad about it, because, frankly, I think it's a lousy deal. But the second thing is, I don't see the reporters saying, by the way, here's the plus side of being out of the Paris Agreement, and even though the president outlined it very well.
That's right. And, in fact, it's just like Johnny Cash said, eh? Good news travels slow. Bad news travels like wildfire. There are many, many scientists who are very pleased that we've pulled out of the Paris Agreement, and he should furthermore pull out of the Framework Convention, the original UN treaty.
Tom, it's a pleasure to have you back on the program. Thanks so much for the work you do at the International Climate Science Coalition. Tom Harris with us. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll get to your phone calls at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarsen.com.
The Lars Larson Show.